Good morning. It's good to see everybody this morning. Glad that you all didn't freeze in the parking lot making it in from your cars this morning. That somebody didn't like try to leave you at home and make sure you couldn't get here or anything. Went off this morning and Brenna and I both left with our keys for the car and left the kids at home with the car. They still made it. And Tracy, it's all because there wasn't any snow. I was so looking forward to it and just so I can't deal with it. Thank you. We will be in Exodus chapter 16 this morning as we continue looking through the story of the Scriptures and trying to help you to understand the flow of the Scriptures, that it isn't just about one particular place in the Bible. It's about the story of what Jesus or what God was doing from creation in the book of Genesis, chapter 1, creating the heavens and the earth and everything in them, and including man as the top of that creation to look after the garden and the sin of Adam and Eve, and then moving forward to his work up to the point of Jesus' death, burial, and resurrection, ascension into heaven, and then from there looking forward to the time when he will return and everything that he is doing in this process of restoration, of redemption for mankind and this universe in which we live. And each picture of the story is part of the whole. It's as if you take a large painting and you look at the painting. It isn't enough just to look at one brush stroke in the middle of that painting and see what color the artist used. You have to look at all of the brush strokes and all of the painting and all of the colors and all of the detail, because they each play a part, and each part of the story, each part of what we have as the Scriptures play a part in the story of what God is doing. And while sometimes we may look at one piece and think it's so much more important than the others, every piece is important to the end picture. I have to ask you this morning, have you ever used the phrase, "you think they would learn"? You know, I know I've often used it as I've watched someone make the same mistake time after time after time. As the truth be told, I also know that there are times when people have probably looked at me and say, "you think he would have learned." And they're probably right. I know that there are times in my life I've made the same mistake more than once, or made mistakes that are very similar more than once and think, man, I really wish I'd learned the first time. Now, there are times when people making the same mistake over and over again is understandable. You know, a child, when they're learning to walk, it's normal to watch them fall. It's normal to watch them make some mistakes. And in fact, you want them to make mistakes because you can learn from the mistakes. Someone learning a foreign language is going to make the same mistake more than once. You just hope they don't embarrass themselves too badly while doing it. Now, on the other side of things, there's times when maybe a student is disruptive in class and they continually end up getting in trouble, or they continually end up with the consequences, and you look at them and you think, man, they should have learned after the first 100 times that that isn't a good idea. Or the person who's just routinely late for everything and they just can't seem to keep a job because they never show up on time, or the person who has multiple speeding tickets because they always think that they need to be the fastest car on the road. And you look and you think they'd learn. Well, this is what we were talking about last week. You know, last week I mentioned that Moses composed this song And he taught the people to sing it immediately after they came through the Red Sea. And the song was to remind them of the fact that God had just brought them through the Red Sea. He doesn't even let this get cold in their mind before he's composing and teaching them this song. It's the same thing that God has did with them when he gave them the Passover meal. They hadn't even celebrated the first Passover, and God is telling them, these are the regulations and this is how you do it year after year. It's the same thing that Jesus did with his disciples when he instituted the new Passover meal, the Lord's Supper, communion, the Eucharist, whatever particular name you want to call this time that we spent together just a few minutes ago, remembering the Lord's death and his resurrection, his shed blood for us. You see, he gives them to us because we leak like sieves or like strainers. And this week's passage is proof of how often and how quickly we leak and we need to be refilled. Now, we might be like a strainer and we might keep the big chunks. There might be some of this theology, some of the big chunks of things that the Scripture teaches us that we remember well. Things like, Jesus loves me, this I know, that we are saved by the grace of God. We remember those things. Unfortunately, some of the smaller things, some of the things that really fill in the details are the things that we quickly forget. We become like the Israelites and we have an attitude and we treat God with this attitude that says, what have you done for me lately? And that's where we find the Israelites in Exodus chapter 16. In Exodus 16, they're less than 3 months from all of the wonderful signs that God has performed in Egypt. They're less than 3 months away from the crossing of the Red Sea. God has already, by the time we get to chapter 16, done all of those things and, through Moses, purified the waters at Marah and Elim. He made the bitter waters sweet so the people could drink from those waters. But yet we come to chapter 16, and beginning in verse 1, this is what Moses records about the Israelites. It says, the whole Israelite community set out from Elim, and they came to the desert of Sin, which is between Elim and Sinai. On the 15th day of the second month, after they had come out of Egypt, in the desert, the whole community grumbled against Moses and Aaron. The Israelites said to them, if only we had died in the Lord's hand in Egypt. There we sat around pots of meat and ate all the food we wanted. But you have brought us out into this desert to starve this entire assembly to death. Then the Lord said to Moses, I will rain down bread from heaven for you. The people are to go out each day and gather enough for that day. In this way I will test them and see whether they will follow my instructions. On the sixth day, they are to prepare what they bring in, and it is to be twice as much as they gather on the other days. So Moses and Aaron said to all the Israelites, in the evening you will know that it was the Lord who brought you out of Egypt. And in the morning you will see the glory of the Lord, because he has heard your grumbling against him. Who are we that you should grumble against us? And then skipping down to the 25th verse, Moses goes on speaking to the people. It says, eat it today, Moses said, because today is a Sabbath to the Lord. You will not find any of it on the ground today. 6 days you are to gather it, but on the seventh day, the Sabbath, there will not be any. Nevertheless, some of the people went out on the seventh day to gather it, but they found none. And then down into chapter 17, beginning with verse 3, it says, but the people were thirsty for water there, and they grumbled against Moses. They said, why did you bring us up out of Egypt to make us and our children and our livestock die of thirst? Then Moses cried out to the Lord, and what am I to do with these people? They are almost ready to stone me. The Lord answered Moses, go in front of the people, take with you some of the elders of Israel, and take your hand in your hand the staff with which you struck the Nile, and go. I will stand there before you by the rock at Horeb. Strike the rock, and water will come out of it for the people to drink. So Moses did this in the sight of the elders of Israel. And he called the place Massah and Meribah, because the Israelites quarreled and because they tested the Lord, saying, Is the Lord among us or not? You see, there are times when I think I look at the stories of Israel and I ask the question, why don't they learn? Oh, why don't they learn? Or you think they would learn? And then I look into my own life and I'm reminded that sometimes I get it right, but all too often I probably am like the Israelites and I have some learning of my own to do. As I was reading this story, I began to think about it and think that, you know, here we see the Israelites, and the unfortunate truth is it's only a month and a half. It's only a month and a half into their journey, and they're already rebelling against God. Rebellion is a funny thing. We all say that we don't want to be rebels, but yet rebellion is so easy. It becomes so easy to rebel, especially against God. Now, truly, there are two different types of rebellion that we see, two different ways that people rebel, and one of them is those who simply just walk away from God. They have heard the story, they have seen the miracles that God has done, yet they, like Pharaoh, harden their hearts and they simply walk away. They don't want to have anything to do with God. They don't want to have anything to do with the people of God. They don't want to have anything to do with the truth because, well, quite frankly, they like their lives the way they are. They like their sin, they like their ways of understanding things, and they simply don't think that God has anything to offer them, and so walking away is the easiest thing. And well, this morning, that's not the type of rebellion that we're looking at. The people here in the desert aren't the kind that are simply turning away from God because they think they like the way things are better. But the second type of rebellion is a verbal rebellion, or it's a more subtle rebellion where we don't necessarily specifically think, I'm just going to walk away from God, but we let the things that we say and we let the things that we do move us away from God. And this is what we see in the people of Israel. They're rebelling against God. Moses says that they were grumbling. And this is one of those words, if you just take the way the word sounds, that's really what they were doing. Grumble, 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 grumble. You just get that feeling that there was just this constant growl of people complaining and trying to find all of the things that were wrong. Instead of looking at all of the things that God has done, instead of looking at all of the blessings that God has already bestowed upon them in the last few months, they're focusing not on the things that God is doing and the things that God has done, but they're focusing on the things that they think God should be doing and He doesn't seem to be taking care of. And so they come to the waters at Marah and Elam, and they complain that the waters can't be consumed. A few days later, as they're continuing on their journey, they complain that they haven't had anything good to eat. Moses, why is it that you're bringing us out into this desert so that we're all going to starve to death? Moses, why is it? Don't you like us? You know, they've been doing this since the beginning of the Exodus process. God warned them that things might be difficult through Moses, but yet when their work began to become more difficult, they complained against Moses and Aaron. Here they are, they're out in the desert, and God has brought them to this point through some great miraculous signs and done some great and miraculous things before them so that they will see and they will believe and they will trust Him. But yet, the moment things begin to get a little bit difficult, they begin to grumble and they begin to complain. God, why is it that we have no water? God, why is it that we have no food? God, why is it that You aren't taking care of us like we think You should? And they begin to complain and they begin to grumble. One author has written a book and titled it The Christian Atheist. And I think that in a way, that's really what's taking place here in the Exodus. It is these people are godly, but yet in some extent they're living as if they're atheists. They're the people of God, and they have trusted God to bring them out of the land, and God has provided for them in some great ways, yet they're living as if they don't believe that God can take care of them or that God cares enough to take care of them. And unfortunately, it can become too easy for us to do the same thing. In fact, Paul, writing to both of his young proteges, Titus and Timothy, touches on this idea in Titus chapter 1, verse 16. He writes to Titus, and he says, "They claim to know God, but their actions deny Him. They are detestable, disobedient, and unfit for doing anything good." You see, there are those people who claim to know God, but yet if you look at their lives, if you listen to the things they say, they claim to be followers, but their life says something totally different. And unfortunately, it can become too easy for us to slip into that. Or what Paul writes to Timothy in chapter 3 of 2 Timothy. He says, "But mark this, there will be terrible times in the last day. People will be lovers of themselves, lovers of money, boastful, proud, abusive, disobedient to their parents, ungrateful, unholy, without love, unforgiving, slanderous, without self-control, brutal, not lovers of good, treacherous, rash, conceited, lovers of pleasure rather than lovers of God." And if we just read there and we stopped, we could look at this and say, well, Paul must be talking just about people out in the world and people who don't claim to know God and live for God. But yet Paul doesn't stop there, because in the next verse he says, "having a form of godliness but denying its power, have nothing to do with such people." There are people who might be sitting in a pew this morning who would claim to love God, but yet if you look at their lives, essentially they're living as atheists. They claim to love God, but they don't trust Him. They put their trust in everything else. And unfortunately, it can be all too easy for us to do the same thing. We must be careful that we don't become like the Israelites, and just after God does something great and show Himself powerful, that we begin to say, "What have You done for me lately? Yeah, I know, God, You provided me with a great steak dinner last night, but today is today. Where is the water? I'm thirsty.